This is The Gaggle with David Helfenbein.
This week on The Gaggle, we have James Rutherford, who goes by Skip Rutherford. Skip Rutherford of Little Rock is Dean of the University of Arkansas Clinton School of Public Service. Skip, it is a pleasure to have you on.
David, thank you for having me. It's good to connect with you. Congratulations on your Gaggle podcast.
Thank you so much. Skip, just to start a little bit about Little Rock and Arkansas, you are a personal friend of President Clinton. Could you go into your history there and how you first met President Clinton?
David, when I was about 23 or 24 years old, I was working in Fayetteville, Arkansas, which is the home of the University of Arkansas. And a friend called and said, "What are you doing after work?" And I said, "Nothing." And he said, "Well, come over. I want you to meet someone who's moving back to Arkansas and is teaching at the law school and is probably going to run for Congress." And I said, "Well, okay, who is it?" So, "Well, his name is Bill Clinton." And I said, "Great, I'd be glad to come over after work and sit down and visit with him." And that started a friendship, but that was the first time I met him.
Ever since you first met President Clinton, and aside from just being his friend, you have been very active in a lot of his causes. You have helped found the Clinton School and now serving as dean. You have also helped build the Presidential Library. Could you talk a little bit about the Presidential Library and the school, and then I'll talk to you a little bit about the planning of both of them?
Yeah, when the president asked me to coordinate his Presidential Library project, I said yes, and then realized I really didn't even know what a Presidential Library project was. But Presidential Libraries are really unique entities. As we see in 2016, it is a very partisan route getting to the presidency. But once you reach the mountaintop, it is a very nonpartisan group. And Presidential Libraries all work together. It was Franklin Roosevelt in 1939 who started the Presidential Library system. Before he was president and before he was governor of New York, he was certainly interested in history and was a great historian, and thought that the records should be preserved. Prior to that, when presidents left office, they took their records with them, and many of them got lost during years of moves and fires and all sorts of stuff, that many of the records were lost. Roosevelt thought they ought to be preserved and protected for American history and research, so he started a library. Herbert Hoover, who preceded him, luckily had not destroyed his papers, liked the idea and built the Presidential Library. Roosevelt was the first, Hoover's the oldest, and through George W. Bush and soon to be Barack Obama, there is a series of presidential libraries. They are built privately with private funds and operated for the most part through the federal government.
And the School of Public Service, that is something that is unique to President Clinton, correct?
You're right. The University of Arkansas Clinton School of Public Service is the nation's first to offer a Master of Public Service degree. This model, the Clinton School's leadership through civic engagement model, is different, David, from the more traditional graduate programs in public administration, public affairs, and public policy, because a significant portion of our two-year academic curriculum is direct field service work. And as part of their studies, Clinton School students perform three major field service projects for academic credit: team-based, international, and individual. And each project is supervised by a faculty advisor and is in collaboration with a community or organizational partner.
How did the idea for the school come about?
It was a collaborative effort between President Clinton and the University of Arkansas. His strong commitment to citizen service, AmeriCorps, City Year, was a key factor in that decision.
Now, are you located right on the library campus as well?
We are, which again is another difference. Many of the, or at least some of the presidential libraries affiliated with schools are located on the college campus. President Clinton brought the college to the library campus. Our headquarters are located in a restored 1899 passenger train station adjacent to the Clinton Library. We have since grown and expanded and have additional facilities blocks away in the downtown River Market District. So we truly are a part of an urban setting.
Are there ways in which the school utilizes the library for research or for classes?
Sure. There's a lot of connection. We do a lot of joint programming with the library. We work on special projects with the library, and we use the library's facilities for our programming.
How long does it take for presidential records to be released? Are all of President Clinton's records released yet, or will it take a number of years?
Oh, buddy, you're into a question that historians go crazy about, and there's all sorts of rules and regulations due to the Presidential Records Act, but it will take years for all the Clinton records to be released. And if I'm not mistaken, not even all the Reagan records are released yet. It just takes so long to process these collections, and you have to deal with all sorts of issues of privacy and national security, and it's a very complicated process. Though there's always this ongoing releasing of records. And when you see, for example, like during the confirmation of Justice Elena Kagan, much of her records came from the Clinton Library during her service in the Clinton administration. So, it's not an easy process. The National Archives will tell you, and I think they make a fair point here, that they're understaffed in terms of archivists to do that. The new challenge you're facing is technology, as most of these records, particularly in the Bush 43 and the Obama years, are digitized technical records, computerized. But as you know, the technology is shifting so quickly that what President Bush and maybe President Obama used as technological advancements in 20 years will be antiquated and outdated, but you still have to process all that.
In supervising and planning the construction of the library, what are some of the most challenging decisions you had to make?
Well, it is a very interesting process. The first 6 to 9 months, I spent listening and learning, visiting libraries, talking to various people, talking to various staffs about what they did right and what they did wrong. You're dealing with all sorts of challenges. Ours was on a brownfield. We were in the middle of an old warehouse district. We had a bunch of property issues dealing with. Every library is different, and then you always run the risk. And it's just because while presidential libraries are thinking historical, the people about the president that's leaving office or building the library thinking contemporarily, because they think, well, he is still a figure on the national scene. So it was hard to explain that this was going to be a historical reservoir. And it was hard to get over just sort of the political feelings of those that were, you know, not for the Clintons. That was a challenge. Another challenge was just managing all the various aspects of the people involved, the city, the Clinton Foundation, the National Archives, because we're on the river, the Corps of Engineers, because we had historic building, historic preservation, So you were managing a lot of people. It was some days like herding cats.
What course or courses do you teach at the Clinton School right now, or upcoming courses?
Well, I teach two courses. To our first-year students, I teach a course called Professionalism, which basically focuses on preparing students for their next steps, quality resumes, networking possibilities, job skills, job interviews, time management, things that become very critical when the students are doing their field service projects and ultimately their career steps or next steps. So that is a course that I teach during the first year. And then I also teach a course that's open to first and second year students on the elections. And so this fall I'll be teaching a course on the 2016 elections.
You were very involved in the commemoration of the 1957 crisis at Little Rock Central High School. Can you talk a little bit about the history of that major event and what that means to Little Rock in particular?
Well, in 1997, I coordinated the 40th anniversary event, and President Clinton participated. If you go back to 1957, if there was ever a mistake that Little Rock and Arkansas made, that was the one. It was just handled wrongly, and the city and the state, some would say, is continuing to pay the price for it. But in 1997, a group of us got together and thought, look, you know, we need to acknowledge this story. We need to commemorate it. We don't need to celebrate it because it was a horrible time for people, but we do need to, we do need to appreciate history. We can learn from history. We don't have to repeat it. And so, in planning that 40th anniversary, the Little Rock Nine all came back. It was interesting in this particular case because the president was Clinton, the governor was Mike Huckabee, who was supportive of the 40th anniversary. And the mayor was Jim Daly, who was supportive of the 40th anniversary, and so we had the political leadership lined up in favor of it. So we knew we had that support. But I think it was captured in as we were planning the event, David. It was interesting. The Little Rock Nine were all in front of the Central High School, and thousands of people out there, and the president and the governor, and I was going over the day's events with the members of the Little Rock Nine, and I said, we're going to conclude the ceremony, and the president, the governor, and the mayor are going to walk up the steps, and they're going to stand at the front door, and they're going to open the doors for you to walk in, because in 1957, those doors were closed. The National Guard and the mobs and some within the school did everything in their power to keep you out. This is a very symbolic nature that you are welcome here and that these doors are open for you. And I remember one of the Little Rock Nine, and they were very appreciative, but one of the Little Rock Nine looked at me and said, what about my safety? And I said, safety? And I said, we have the President of the United States, so we've got Secret Service, federal government. We have the governor of Arkansas, so we've got the state police, and they're on our side this time. And we've got the mayor of Little Rock, so we've got the city police. And I don't know what more I can guarantee. We've got law enforcement en masse here. And the member said, well, you have to remember, the last time I walked up those steps, the mob was chasing me. And I thought to myself, wow, I was thinking of this as an event. And this is not just an event. This is reality. And this is coming to grips with the dark side of this terrible experience of, here's 15, 16, 17-year-old children were being chased by a mob. And that really had an impact on me. I was very sensitive to that, because I failed to look at it from their eyes.
It's an amazing story. Do you see echoes of problems across the country when you look at the election today with certain candidates and certain riots going on?
You know, I think that this election reminds me somewhat of 1968. And you don't remember that, but it was a year where Vietnam was raging, where Martin Luther King was killed, where Bobby Kennedy was killed, where the Chicago Democratic Convention was full of riots, where you had a lot of protests, a lot of anti-establishment candidates, and a lot of anger. And so there's some similarity, I think, to that with the anger that we're seeing in this election. But I'm optimistic on two or three fronts. Number one, I think in fairness, whether you agree or disagree with Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders, the fact that they've got new people involved in the process, it may be different people, but you've got people that have never been involved before and excited before. For the body politic, I believe that's a good thing. For the rhetoric, I believe it's problematic.
How has Southern politics in particular changed since you've known it? Has there been a realignment or Democrats?
Yeah, and the big realignment came after LBJ signed the Civil Rights Act. And in 1964, what were Southern conservative Democrats turned into Southern conservative Republicans. And what we've seen in the South is it went from solid D to solid R. Now, demographics are changing. And you're looking at states like Virginia and North Carolina and Florida and Georgia, Louisiana, that are making, and probably in the next 8 years, 12 years, Texas, in the next 12 years, Mississippi, where they're going to be very competitive again because of demographics. Because of a lot of non-white voters and a lot of the older whites dying off. Now, in states like Arkansas is moving more from the South to the Midwest, because while we don't have an increasing number of non-white or large numbers of non-white percentages increasing, our population growth is from the suburbs of Chicago and St. Louis to the northern tier of the state, largely more conservative. So Arkansas is moving, if you think of football alignment, Arkansas is moving away from the SEC and into the Big 12. And we're becoming more like Oklahoma and Nebraska and Kansas, and less like Georgia and Virginia and North Carolina.
I usually end with a question, which is asking people how do they follow a career path like theirs. But for you, I want to frame it a little differently, which is what advice do you give to your students?
My advice to students is very simple, and that is, look, seize every opportunity that comes your way. The choice you never can make is the choice you never heard of. So I always urge students to explore possibilities, to not be afraid to get off the beaten path, to dare to be different, to get involved, and to roll up their sleeves and get out there and do things that perhaps their parents and others wouldn't do. So one of the challenges of Arkansas is that unlike New York or Washington or those places, we have to work real hard at getting our young people national and international exposure. And at the Clinton School, we do that through our international project work and for a speaker series that I think is one of the best college speaker series in the country that brings people in here to expose people to ideas. But I just think expand your choices.
Kip Rutherford, thank you so much.
David, thanks for having me, and congratulations on your podcast.
I appreciate it.